Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Watts for Jack Watts Live, broadcasting to you today from the 10th floor of the We Believe Tower in Midtown Atlanta, overlooking the majestic Buckhead skyline, where the weather is cooling appreciably after the spectacular weather we had for the weekend, as all of us watched Bubba Watson, a UGA Bulldog, take home the Masters. We love that. We definitely do. All right, we've got a lot to do today and a lot to talk about. I've got, as you know, in order to recapture this nation, there are some very specific things that we need to do. One, retake the Senate. Two, bolster the House of Representatives with more candidates, more elected congressmen who are willing to stand for righteousness, for the truth, for equality, for all of the values that we were taught in school to hold dear that are no longer taught. People that will stand against corruption, deceit, fraud, voter manipulation, and said, I think I have Mitch Swain on the line right now. Mitch, are you on the line?
Mitchell Swan is on the line, my friend. How are you?
Good. How are you? And I've got my brother Richard's on the line also. So we're just hanging in there, all of us. And he got cut off, but we're here. And he'll call back in. Now, listen, there's something I wanted to just ask you. One, when exactly is the primary? What is the date of it? We need to tell people so they can put it on their calendar and get ready to vote. What day is it?
The day of the official election is 20 May, for the primary, but early voting begins April 28th, so people can go down and do early voting if they choose after the 28th.
So they've got three weeks to do early voting, and but the primary is on the 20th of May. That's a date to put on your calendar. Everybody who is in the 10th district in Georgia particularly. Now, we're interested in all kinds of races, but we have a commitment to Mitch because I know him, I know his character, I know his value, and I know what kind of man and leader he will be in the Congress, and he's the guy that we want. So we can't influence everything, but we can push hard for a couple of things, and this is the one that's in our little corner of the world. So, Mitch, with that in mind, tell the folks where you're going to be here this upcoming week.
Well, I'm going to be this evening. I'm driving down to Monroe for the monthly GOP meeting there. And then on Thursday evening from 7 to 9, I'll be in the city of Monroe, and I'll be at El Cubanita. It's a Cuban coffee shop down there in the center of town, and we're going to be doing a meet and greet there as well. So people can come out and grill me and ask me questions, tell me what's important to them, and see where I stand on issues that they care about, and vet me out.
Mitch, I just have this sense and this feeling that things are really picking up, and there's kind of an excitement about the impending election and a kind of a growing consensus of people that are saying, you know, I like this Marine colonel. And if we can win the primary, it's going to be harder to win the primary than the general election, because the constituency is pretty conservative, and the conservative candidate, which you would be, will do better. Plus, you know, they had a pretty good congressman for a long time who is really doing pretty well in the Senate, actually, as a race that he's up for. Is that how you see things?
Well, it is, and I can tell you analytically how I can see that momentum is building on my in my campaign. It's just by the traffic, the web traffic going to my website, SwanAmerica.com. We, you know, we would have our weeks where, you know, days would go by and you might have, you know, some slow days, 60 people come and look at your website. And recently, you know, we're getting days where we're having consistently 400 and 500 people checking out my site and then spending time on it, watching my videos. I know that I've just attracted the attention of a lot of veteran groups here in Georgia who are just disgruntled with how the nation's going. And
they're very
involved. So, certainly.
Okay.
So those are some of the things we know we're picking up.
Yeah, let me just say this. It's Swan for Georgia, SwanForGeorgia.
Oh, you're killing me, man. You're killing me. No, it's Swan for America.
What did I say, Georgia? Sorry.
Yeah, you said Swan for Georgia, but I'm for Georgia, too. But Swan for America, yes, sir.
My whole point was that the four is F-O-R and not the number four.
Well, we've gotten to the point now. If they just type Mitchell Swan, they actually it should comes up in Google right away. So they go right to my site that way as well.
There you go.
So, yeah. But I think everyone is starting to really start to pay attention. You know, we've had our debates going on. You know, we know the problems with the EPA. We see what's going on out there with the ranchers in Nevada. And people are starting to realize that they don't have privacy in their personal property, and even more concerning is the overreach of federal government. And
let's just stop for one second. What's going on out there in Nevada is, in my estimation, a precursor to things that potentially are going to happen all over the place, and the groundswell of anger by taxpaying citizens, good people, is substantial. Tell everybody what you think about this. I mean, we're really interested.
Well, I'll share my thoughts on it. And of course, you know, I don't have the time now to perhaps watch the news and drill down as a lot of people do as we get very focused on campaigns. But I think the things that concern me the most is we look at this rancher who his family has been ranching for some 140 years out there, as I understand, grazing on this land in the past. It is public land. And I think at that point, we could stop and say, well, is this perhaps more of a state issue? But I think what is concerning people is that the federal government comes in now and can change rules on people, threaten their livelihood, and is perhaps more with the threat of force that we as Americans find most upsetting about this. And, you know, whenever I have armed federal troops coming in and so forth, rounding up cattle, it's not a good optic, and it doesn't make us feel good as Americans. And, you know, it reminds me of the time when Gibson Guitar was stormed by the IRS that stormed them, or tobacco and firearms stormed them because of the wood they were using, imported from India. You know, it's that over-the-top threat of force I find most upsetting in this country because, you know, we're supposed to be a nation of laws and discourse, and certainly, you know, sending out somebody, a deputy with a subpoena or a court order that would cease and desist would be enough. And I think that's what I'm most upset about as I look across my country right now, because we certainly seem to handle our own citizens with a greater level of authority and force and intimidation than we do actual criminals. You know, as one person read, I saw on the internet, let's be worried about securing our borders and not the grazing lands of Nevada. So those are my thoughts.
You mentioned
to hear yours and Dick's.
At the same time that rancher was being harassed, President Obama was in New York with Al Sharpton. at his little soiree, and Sharpton has owed the IRS more than $1 million for 10 years, and there's no harassment for him whatsoever. What bothers me more than anything is when the law applied discriminating towards one group as versus the other. Now, I'll grant you, you go back 60 years and with segregation and laws that discriminated against black people. Now, it's turned completely on its ear. And when you have someone like Al Sharpton, who really has been involved in criminal behavior and has owed the IRS all of this money, and they have done nothing towards him, but they're out there harassing this guy in Nevada for letting his cattle eat. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and it is infuriating. And I believe that's infuriating to just about every American who wants we just want the laws applied the same to everybody. I think it's completely wrong to apply the laws differently in any way. If, you know, we're citizens, and when we are citizens, that is the equality, period. And it isn't, that isn't the way it is. And, you know, I'm resentful about that, and I think that there's a growing resentment in America about this. What do you think?
Well, that resentment's there. I think, again, looking at the crimes that we're trying to, that we say they have committed, we know that they're not violent crimes. No one's in danger here. There's cows just grazing. In the case of Gibson Cantar, it was imported wood. And, you know, they go in there as if they're an imminent threat, armed to the teeth. And I think the other thing I would touch on is when we look at the IRS investigations, the Benghazi investigations, people claiming that they can't produce the emails that the House is asking for or the Senate is asking for, and yet we know that the NSA can go back, reach back, and pull all of your emails and mine going back to 2005. And so it's hard to see that we want to be a nation of laws, but then when those in charge of enforcing the laws and applying them aren't able to even be held to a standard because they stonewall inside the bureaucracy. And I think that is one reason. You know, recently people have asked a lot of questions. You know, how do you feel about businesses being able to put money into campaigns? And obviously, we look at this nation and we recognize that businesses really are the engines that drive this economy, that drive our GDP. And they have a right to be involved in that because the people that are elected can give them favorable treatment or unfavorable business treatment. And certainly we're in more of an unfavorable business environment right now. But the thing that most bothers businessmen, and maybe all of us as citizens, is that when we elect officials, it's not so much the elected officials, what they do to us. It's the appointees that none of us elected that get assigned to agencies like the EPA, like the IRS, like the Department of Education, like Health and Human Services. Those people we had no say in actually putting into those positions, but they are put there by the people we elect. And so it's critical for all of us to choose people competently and vet them to Congress because the ripple effect with appointments can really hurt us or really help us. And I think that's an overlooked issue that people don't talk about enough.
You know, there are several things that have happened here in the last few days that really are pretty interesting. I think that the, you know, 7.5 million people who have signed up on the Obamacare website, pulling the fat out of the fire and saving the day at the very end, which is how it's being touted. At the same time, they don't tell us how many of these policies are actually in force. Now, every American at one time or another has to deal with insurance, even if it's just car insurance. So, you know, you could say, you know, well, I called the insurance company. That isn't going to cover you in an accident. The only thing that will cover you in an accident is if you have paid your premium. And why we can't have the number of people who have paid the premium is beyond me. They have to know it. If they pass those 7.5 million, just in the next column, it'll say how many of them paid, and yet they don't have that. Is that solvable to you as it is to me?
Well, it is. It ties into a bigger issue. If you look at our nation, there's three things that we need as a society to sustain ourselves individually and as a community, and that is energy, food, and medical care, and, you know, medicine, access to medicine. And if you look at those three things and how they have changed over the last 7 years, and we see how high our gas prices have gone and how we have, you know, really put it to the coal producers so that they cannot succeed. You know, they're just so heavily regulated now. We haven't cut the Keystone Pipeline. And so we're suffering right now with overregulation on energy. You know, everyone wants to be energy independent. And, you know, an interesting thing about that is energy independence sounds great, but more important to me is that we have cheap energy. Because if someone said, well, Mitch, isn't energy independence more important? Well, if we went all nuclear, then no, because nuclear power and power plants are extremely expensive to maintain and to build, and that the electricity is expensive. I'd much rather start looking towards, you know, cleaner coal production and natural gas production. Then we look at our, you know, just our food and how much food has gone up for all of us over the last few years, and yet we, you know, we continue to take corn and convert it to ethanol. And now that we have, you know, medical issues going on with expenses going way up, coverage not being there for people, it's important for people to remember, too, just because you receive, say, Medicaid coverage. I know some people now that have been given moved over to Medicaid, and one woman, Colleen, has recently discovered after being moved over that she has, you know, pre-cancer, needs some treatment. And yet all of her doctors that she had used now, while they accept Medicaid, they won't see her because they've hit their quota. And so we find instances now where people actually have coverage, like having a debit card, but it's not being accepted at the retailers they go to, that they're used to going to, because no one's accepting it. They're at their quota. And so there's that false sense of having coverage, but then not actually being able to get the medical care out there when you need it. So going back to what you said about health care and so forth, absolutely, it's critical for us as a nation to understand where we're going with that. It's so essential to every one of us, and again, as is food and energy, and yet all three of those seem to just be skyrocketing them twice. There's nothing being done to get our economy going again, like the flat tax I recommend, and it's discouraging.
Yeah, it is. And one of the things that has just been interesting to me, May of last year, the daily Real Clear Politics average of the president's approval rating brought him into negative numbers for the first time since a year earlier. And he has been in negative numbers essentially for an entire year. But he still has a 42% approval rating, which I find very interesting considering that he's been caught in so many lies. The Middle East and Eastern Europe, he's looked so bad vis-a-vis the Russians and Vladimir Putin, and the exorbitant expenses that his wife has for these trips that are all on our nickel. And the dismantling of the military so that there is more money to be put into welfare. My question to you is this: how can his approval rating not drop to the floor? I mean, there are some groups that will, you know, that want him no matter what, but it just seems like to have a 42% approval rating at this point is awfully high for somebody who has done so little and who has been a monumental failure at his number one legislative goal of Obamacare and, you know, all of the lies involving that. What do you think? Are you there? Well, perhaps we have... Mitch, are you there? I guess he's back. Mitch, I see you back on. Yeah, I lost you there for a second. Did you hear me ask that question? Are you there? Mitch? Well, folks, one of the things that when you are in radio that you don't like is downtime and dead space. So I'm going to answer that question myself while I'm waiting for Mitch to get back on. And that is, how can the president enjoy 42% favorable rating? Clearly, there are some people who have a vested interest in the president, regardless of what he does, groups. But then again, there are just literally millions of people in America who just don't pay attention to what is going on. And those people, they just like it because he's the president. It doesn't really much matter who the president is. Unfortunately, that is an electorate that really doesn't know what they're talking about is the single greatest problem that a Democratic Republic faces. Having an informed electorate is critical. Now, I know that for the progressives and for Obama and his minions, the teabaggers are the ones that they dislike, and they say that they are a danger to American society. I'd like to know how. I don't see that even at all. I see them as people who are spending a great deal of time, working for the betterment of this nation. What do you think about that, Mitch? Are you back on?
Yes, I'm back on, but I missed all the insightful questions you just asked. So
we were talking about the president's popularity and how it could even be in the 42 percentile range as approved. You know, it's over 50 disapproved, which is pretty substantial. But my thought is that it would be dropping even lower than this by now. But I know that there are a lot of people that have a vested interest, in getting their share, so they want him. But that's 42 seems pretty high to me. What about you?
Well, there's always going to be that hard line that just wants their party in office. You know, some days it's not about the governance we're getting, but just having your team in office that matters to people, and believing that eventually it will work. And some people, I hate to say it, they were wrong. So they'll continue to back the guy in the White House.
It's a whole lot easier to fool somebody than for somebody to admit that they've been fooled. And that seems to happen. Now, when you are out and about, do you find a lot of people who are stalwart supporters of the president?
Mitch? I'm sorry, Jack. I missed a lot of that. Well, I'm sorry for this poor reception. I need to come to your studio. What was the essence of the question, sir?
In your dealings with people in your district, do you find a lot of strong support for President Obama, or is it tepid?
I would say that what I find most is that we have everyone's become a cynic, that they don't believe the Republicans or the Democrats can solve our problems. You know, people who would call themselves Republicans are so disengaged from the process right now because they almost feel that our party is just as bad. And they're just tired of the apathy and the lying that goes on in Washington is truly how I see it. Clearly, no one's happy with the course of the nation, but as much as they blame perhaps the administration, they're also angry at the lack of leadership on the Republican side.
I think that there's at least a good bit of fairness to that as far as the leadership goes. What happens is that when an administration is corrupt, tarnishing of it just falls on everybody. And
sure.
This is the most corrupt administration in American history, and the discouragement and defeatism is really pretty pronounced at this point, I think. Don't you agree?
Oh, I absolutely do. And I think it's not just a lack of confidence in the federal government. I think that bleeds down to other agencies, just like you said. And all of a sudden, it's no faith in the school system, no faith in the IRS system, even at the state level. And, you feel like everybody is just in it for themselves and not in it for our betterment, which is what we send the money up to Washington for. We certainly send it in there to improve our own lifestyles as a nation. And when you feel that you're getting no benefit for it, you certainly become cynical.
Well, we've got a month and a week before the primary. What are the things that you want the people to take away, to remember about you, so that when they go to the poll, they will pick you as versus a half a dozen other folks?
Well, the first thing is that I truly am, without hubris, the only candidate that actually has a plan to fix our nation. It's five steps, and they're not sound bites, they're not intentions, they're an actual well-written plan. The thing that separates me from other Republicans,
and those are all located for people on Swan for America. You can go to that website and tap into them. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Yep. Now that's where they're located. I would say the other thing I caught a lot of heat for was that I'm one of the few people that sees that we need to just resolve the illegal immigration situation and offer them a pathway to citizenship contingent on them paying a fee or a fine, learning basic English. English is the standard for the nation. Don't commit crimes and so forth. And many people just are opposed to it and still want to see themselves deport. It just isn't ever going to happen. And I was encouraged last week when Bill O'Reilly on his TV show, during his talking points, framed out a solution to immigration that was absolutely identical to my own. And it was further supported by Karl Rove, who added that employers should be able to pay the fee, and which is a part of my plan. And they both acknowledged that there would have to be some kind of economic factor to stimulate our economy. And, of course, that's my flat tax that's coupled with the immigration reform. So,
listen, I'm really glad that they've done that. All right, listen, we're out of time for today, but we'll pick this up again next Monday afternoon. And remember, Swan for America. Go take a look at what he's got and listen. Mitch, thank you. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America. Good night.